Hey, this is Paul Wilson of Karate Cafe. I'm not really a leading martial arts podcast figure, respected the world over for my opinion. But I do play one on the internet, and when I'm not doing that, I listen to Practical Defense. And now, so are you.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. This is episode 188, and I am your host, Alex Addicks. We have a long episode this week, but I'm certain everyone's going to enjoy it. Steve Tuttle, Vice President and one of the founding members of Taser International, is our guest this week. We have a wonderful and candid discussion on various Taser devices and how they apply to personal protection. But before we get to the interview, I just want to give everyone a quick update on my book. The final edits are back, which means it will go to the fabulous Nikki for layout next week. When she's done with it, the book will head off to the printers. The final title is Practical Home Security, and it will be available in Kindle and DeadTree print versions. Alrighty, let's move on to the interview with Steve Tuttle of Taser International.
The legal aftermath of using a gun in self-defense can be traumatic and expensive. Get help and peace of mind through the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Network members receive much-needed financial and legal support right after a self-defense incident. They also receive education in the form of DVDs from some of the top names in the business, along with having access to a nationwide pool of attorneys. Learn about membership at www.armedcitizensnetwork.org.
Welcome back. So our guest this week is Steve Tuttle, one of the founding members of Taser International, and he currently is the Vice President of Communications. Thanks for coming on, Steve.
Good to be here.
Now, I've spoken a lot about Tasers in past episodes, and they've generated a lot of chatter on the message boards and in email. And our listeners have expressed a lot of interest in the device because they can legally be carried in many areas where firearms can't. We also have many listeners who may not like to carry a firearm that may consider a taser instead. And actually, my wife's a perfect example of this. So what I'd like to do today is really dive into the device, how it should be used, the limits of the device, and how it's used in the real world. So let's start with some definitions. Many folks confuse tasers and stun guns. Can you explain what each of these devices are and why they're different?
Certainly, stun guns are handheld devices that are fairly inexpensive that actually put an electrical arc through the air about an inch across at the most, and they advertise things from 25,000 volts up to 3 million volts. Completely erroneous when they talk about this voltage numbers because voltage is meaningless, but those stun devices are contact devices, meaning it's like, I use an analogy, it's like holding an iron. If you were to come at me and attack me, I would have this stun gun, which is akin to an iron. I would touch you with it. Now, it's not going to burn you like an iron, but it's going to be painful, just like an iron would be. And your natural reaction would be to jump back or, get away from that pain. So it's a pain compliance tool. It's kind of scary when you get hit the first time by it. And it feels a lot like pinpricks, and sometimes it feels a lot like burning, but it's not burning the skin. And that's a direct device. You've got to literally hold to somebody. The problem is, and I use this analogy a lot, is if I put an iron to you, what's your first thing you're going to do is you're going to jump back and I'm no longer making contact with you.
So this is now, the name that we see a lot on like YouTube videos where people are, sneaking up and gagging people, pulling a gag on them. They're asleep and they hit them with a stun gun to wake them up and they shock and they jump around.
Yeah, you'll see that. You'll even see that in some of the wildlife shows, too. I just saw this on the VexCon show the other day, and they were calling it a taser. That's the other problem, is a lot of people call stun guns taser. Well, taser's a trademark name. We're the only ones that can use it. And that is a completely different tool from a contact device. Now, that stun gun, I wouldn't recommend. And the reason I wouldn't recommend a stun gun, because if I can keep somebody at bay, I guess that's a good tool. But if someone were to take that away, it's useless. But not only that, it doesn't cause incapacitation. Just like an iron won't cause incapacitation. It'll certainly keep somebody away for a second until the contact is broken. Now, the difference between a taser brand device is significant. We use a very discrete electrical signal that's been studied for the last 18 years. It is the most studied, less lethal tool on the law enforcement market today. And what it does is it does have a stun gun capability. And I hate that word because stun gun implies that if you hit somebody with a stun gun, they're stunned. And, you know, when I think of stun, I think of someone that's out of commission or has been hit by a boxer right in the jaw. You know, it's stunned. It doesn't do that. It's just very uncomfortable. Now, what we do with the taser that's different is that we actually have what's called a taser cartridge. It's kind of like ammunition. And when you load it into a taser, you actually have the ability to pull a trigger, and it deploys two small probes. Now, two small probes are fancy names for darts. These darts, for the consumers, would fly 17 feet. It's a top one that goes straight out where a laser sight is aimed. The bottom one goes down at an 8-degree angle. Now, in mathematic terms, that gives you about a foot of spread for every 7 feet. So if we hit somebody at 14 feet, we have about a 2-foot spread. And the reason we do that is that when we spread that signal out beyond about the inch gap of a stun gun, we start having a different effect. And the effect becomes a neuromuscular incapacitation effect with our particular electronic signal that we patented. And this took us years to get to that level. For the first 8 years, we had a product that wasn't causing complete incapacitation. We do have one now, and the level that we're at right now causes incapacitation. So when I deploy those two probes, those darts stick to either clothing or skin. Skin penetration is not required. And we're sending a discrete electrical signal. And for the consumer, like the C2, it would run for 30 seconds. Now imagine if I'm hit with two probes, say the stomach and the thigh. I've now caused my muscles to contract 19 times per second, and I've caused a sensory overload and a neuromuscular incapacitation to that human. And for 30 seconds, I will be unable to do any coordinated action. I will fall to the ground, and I will look like I'm having almost like a seizure, if you will, if you were to see somebody get hit, or I would completely lock up. Now, you'd see that person vibrate a little bit, but for that 30-second period, they cannot fight back. They're incapacitated. It's not pain compliance that we use to stop them. We literally took out their ability to use any controlled muscle movements, and they can't override that. Now, keep in mind, they're plugged into it. Remember, the probes are stuck to them, so it's not like a stun gun where you can hold it there and the person jumps back and they disconnect. This person has now had these probes spread out and they're stuck to them for that 30-second ride. Now, what we tell the consumer is, that is your window of opportunity to get away. So you're going to deploy that device, the person goes down, you place that C2 on the ground, you evade, you get out of that dangerous situation. You call 911, you leave your $400 item behind, and we'll replace it for free if it's used in self-defense. We want that person to get out of that dangerous situation.
Wow. Okay, so there are a lot of points there.
A ton. And I'm sorry to ramble on like that, but it's a lot.
Yeah, there are a lot. So one of the most interesting ones that I heard in the beginning is that the darts don't have to make contact with the skin. Now, because I've heard that there are problems with heavy clothing, especially during the winter, where if the dart doesn't make contact with the skin, it's lost and the connection isn't made. Now, this is one of the things I also, just because I'm based in Los Angeles and I was around for the Rodney King riots. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people don't know this, that Rodney King was tased twice before the law enforcement went to their batons. And it didn't work on him. And I think people said it was because of getting caught up in his clothing. But you're saying the new devices don't need to actually touch the skin.
That is correct. And the way that it works, and that the Rodney King one was the old original Taser Tron, not our product. But the way that it works is that once those probes have made contact with clothing, as long as they're within about an inch to an inch and a half away, that signal still jumps through the clothing, and that's where the high voltage comes into play. It literally jumps. You'll see the arc jump right through the clothing. So it's not required. Now, that's a kettle of fish that we want to cover, though, because if the clothing is too thick, then you're going to be beyond that inch and a half, 2 inches of thickness to where that electrical signal can't jump to something conductive like the skin. Now, keep in mind, you are in California, so you've probably seen a lot of success with tasers there in terms of police use. But we're sold throughout the world in 107 countries. The RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, use this heavily up by the Arctic Circle. So there are ways to get this on, like pants or in the back. That's actually used a lot by law enforcement teams where they hit somebody in the back with this, or where the clothing is tighter. So while it is an issue, it's not as critical as most people think, because it can still get through a lot of clothing. And we're used in Minneapolis and Pierre, some very cold towns as well.
Now, you said a discrete signal. Could you give a little more detail on that?
Sure. We used to always see these advertisements, again, talking about the voltage, you know, these million volts and 3 million voltage. Voltage does not stop somebody's behavior. It doesn't cause pain. Voltage is simply the pressure behind electricity. What the key is the microcoulombs or the current. And as you tweak them and as you space out the initial, I guess, the gaps in time on this discrete signal, does many different things to the human body. And our particular range that we use is discrete. It's patented. We use one that maximizes what we call a tetanic reaction. It's a muscle contraction that does that 19 times per second. And it's safe in that it's not high current. And this is where I lose most journalists. I could start talking about watts, amps, and joules, and things like that, and current and microcoulombs. Nobody really understands that, and they also don't understand voltage. But what I can tell you is that if we were to use this in terms of joules, and that's J-O-U-L-E-S, the output is about 0.07 joules per pulse. Compared to a cardiac defibrillator, they're about 360 joules per pulse. So you can see they're much, much lower current or much lower power than something potentially dangerous for cardiac tissue. And it's amazing. It doesn't take that much power. I mean, these are two lithium camera batteries that are used in the C2. The ones are used by law enforcement, also use two and three different batteries there. And these are using signals that are even less powerful than a camera flash, if you can believe that.
Wow. Okay. Because that was actually one of my questions further down, is what types of batteries these things use and how are they kept charged? Because, you know, sometimes these things can sit in the bottom of a purse for, you know, a year or more. What is the storage of these things? How do you keep them charged and how do you make certain that it's good to go when you need it?
Well, you do have a 5-year shelf life on these lithium batteries, and these are, they're called lithium CR123s, if anybody wants to know the exact type of battery. They retail for $29 for us from Taser. They have a 5-year shelf life, but we also have a battery check that when you slide back the safety on the C2, it will give you a power indicator. And we highly recommend somebody always checks that they have a green light. It's like checking your battery in your car. You're always going to want to do that occasionally because you want to make sure these devices are fully functioning. You can even take the Taser cartridge out, pull back that safety and give a quick little spark to make sure it's arcing and that you're getting that positive green signal. If you see a red light, it will still work, but you don't want to trust it. You want to replace that battery. And these work very, and lithium works very well in cold environments. Certainly, wouldn't want to have this sitting in a freezer and want to go take this out in the streets. But this, again, these are the same batteries used by law enforcement that are patrolling streets. And these lithium batteries hold up very well in hot climates and cold climates.
So let's talk about carry.
Sure.
Now, I've heard different things about restrictions on being able to carry these. Now, is training required?
Training is not required. Now, we do provide
all 50 states. Unless you can also speak to some of the international rules, because we do have an international audience.
Well, we do have an international presence in some of the countries. I can tell you that right now we're not legal in Canada, so it is a restricted weapon there. That's usually the most common question we get international-wise. And it's not a tool that you can purchase in America and then take it to an international country. This is a heavily regulated law enforcement tool. All police products are in the United States, and you can't leave the country without an export license. So that's the one caveat there. Now, as far as the availability in the United States, it's available right now in 43 states, and come the second weekend of November, they'll be adding Michigan to that list.
This is Alex in Post. Steve let me know that he meant to say Wisconsin, not Michigan.
It's the first state since we started the company that will legalize consumer sales of Taser devices, and it just simply requires a firearms license there. Now, there are two states that require firearms license, or FID cards, if you will, firearms license in Illinois and Connecticut. There are 43 states that allow Tasers. You can cross into state lines with these devices. There are various restrictions in some of the places where you can't take them into schools. Some places allow you to take them to school. So you have to really check your local jurisdictions on these. And the number one question I get state-wise, it is legal in California.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
Now, what about concealed? Does it have to be open carry, concealed carry? Does that even apply to these?
In the vast majority of cases, these can be carried concealed. Here in Arizona, they can be carried concealed. Even in California, concealed. Most states allow these to be carried concealed. And if you do that, there's a storage issue. And you want to put those in some type of holster if possible. Certainly, they can be carried in a purse. They can be carried in a pocket. The C2 is about 6 inches long, but it's very small. It looks like a Remington shaver kind of crossed with an old cell phone. It's very light. It's about 7 ounces. So it's simple to use. You wouldn't even know it's in my pocket if I put it in my pocket. It can be pulled out very easily, but I like having holsters with it. That way it's accessible to you. If you're going to someplace you think might be a little bit risky, I would rather have it on a holster for me.
Okay. Now, one of the reasons, of course, why we want the holster is to cover the trigger, to make sure you don't get a negligent discharge with the trigger, something caught in the pocket or purse or things like that.
Correct. Now, there is a safety that slides over that button, but as with any type of device that has a safety, you always want to go the extra mile, and having a holster is just, it's just smart. It's one more step to prevent something like a bad discharge that would happen.
Now, in terms of holsters, do you have concealed holsters as well as open carry holsters?
We have various holsters out there, and there's numerous brands that make different holsters. We sell a whole line of holsters that are out there. There are private companies that also get into the business of holstering, and that's it's a fickle business. I'm glad we didn't get too deep into the holstering, but as far as the supplying of them, we made so many different types of holsters for law enforcement, and people get very particular about how weapons are holstered. So I can tell you there's lots of companies out there that make different holsters for it.
Okay. What about restrictions based on age?
Ah, good question. In most states, it tends to have a restriction of 18, and you have to be an adult in most states to possess the taser itself.
Could you run that by me one more time?
Sure.
You can... You have to be 18 to purchase, but do you have to be 18 to carry?
We require, internally, we require if they buy direct from us that someone has to be 18 years of age. But if someone goes into a store in a various state or in the various states that are out there, most states have an age restriction, and for the vast majority of those, it is 18 as well.
Okay, so you can't have a friend who is 18 go in and buy it for you and then carry it because that will get you into trouble.
Correct.
Okay. I wanted to make that very clear.
Very clear. And then you get into who it's registered to in various states. Like Florida, it's got to be registered to you as the owner.
Okay, so there is a registration process in some states.
Well, it's not with the state of Florida. It's interesting what they did. I wrote the law there years ago for the Floridians there. When you buy a Taser C2, if you buy it direct or if you buy in Cabela's or Sports Authority or one of our dealers, you have bought a paperweight. It does not work when you open that package up. So hope it's not surprising anybody, but when they buy it, they have to, and we tell the people, they have to register it through us. And what we've done is we do a registration, and it's done at a private level. It's required by our company. We all develop this device for law enforcement and consumers to properly use this. The last thing we want to do is not sleep well at night, have a bunch of gangbangers using this, and just use it for nefarious reasons. We just didn't want to be associated with that criminal element. There are plenty of legitimate buyers out there that want to buy this product. And so what we did when we developed the first Taser that we sold, and it's still ongoing, is that we have the anti-felon identification system. That's a lot of words, so we shorten it down to AFID, A-F-I-D. When you purchase a C2, it doesn't work. You have to go to a secure website or call our toll-free number, and you supply a Social Security number. Now, anybody can go out there in the street and get a fake Social Security number, so we're aware of that. And what happens is when you supply that Social Security number, there's a series of questions that are asked that only you of the owner of that Social Security number would know. So it's called an identification verification. If you pass that test, and it's very quick, it would ask you questions about, you know, who you paid your mortgage to in, say, 1999, or what color car was your car in, say, 2001. So it's pretty simple questions only you would know, but you have to get a 4 out of 5 of these questions right. So once you've passed the identification verification, you go on to a criminal background check. And as long as you don't have a criminal background, we then send you the unique code. It's a special way that you've slipped back the safety several different times and pushed the button that would actually activate that C2. So now, one, we know who you are. We've got a really good record on you because we've got your social security number and we know your address. And then we've checked to see that your background behavior is good. Now, we're going to check your foreign behavior too. And we're the only weapons company that does this. When you deploy that taser, it spits out about 30 little small pieces of confetti that look like a hole punch. They're a little smaller. They have serialized numbers on there that will match back to the owner. So if I was to go into rob a liquor store in, say, Los Angeles with a Taser C2 that was registered to me, it's like leaving 30 business cards at the scene of the crime. And it is our full intention at Taser to provide the information to law enforcement to make sure that you're caught. So that's what we've done to prevent criminal use. It's proactive. Law enforcement supports this. And it also is a way of tracking when there's been a crime to verify that you've used this in self-defense. Because if you remember, if you use this in self-defense, if you get a report that it was used in self-defense, we'll replace your unit for free. So it kind of works for both ways, for both the criminal element and for the folks that really want to use this for legitimate reasons.
So if the device is stolen, they need to report that to you immediately.
Absolutely. And that's covered in our training that we provide in a DVD. It's written in the materials in the manual there. So, yes, there is a way to cover that and contact us if in the event that your device is stolen. That has happened. And in some cases, we've been able to retrieve those devices because some of the criminals have been caught with these devices. And law enforcement knows they can contact us because we've been so good at serializing these. They can actually do a download and contact a Taser, and we can tell them who actually is the rightful owner.
Okay. Excellent. Let's talk about now how well these work against people that are under the influence of drugs or alcohol.
Good. Yeah, let me cover that because there's been a lot of misnomers out there, particularly when we started the company. You know, the Rodney King issue was supposedly the, you know, Rodney King was impervious to tasers because of PCP, alcohol, and some cocaine would prevent this from using, you know, having a taser work. Completely false. We've not met Superman yet that can go through a good contact with a taser. Now, let me preface that by saying what I have is a tool that is not a magic bullet. There are things that come into play. You've got to get the two probes to make a good connection. The clothing can't be too thick in some cases. So there are things that can make it ineffective. And so there are things that come into play for that. But in terms of alcohol, there's no play whatsoever. PCP, cocaine, methamphetamines, marijuana, the most common street drugs have no interaction with the electricity whatsoever. Now, those drugs will have a significant effect upon all the other tools that are out there when force is used by, say, law enforcement or consumers. If that person is jacked up high enough, they don't feel pain. So when you pepper spray somebody, potentially, if they're no longer feeling pain, they can open their eyes. Pepper spray does not prevent you from opening your eyes. It just makes it very painful to open your eyes. But if you can overcome pain, you can get through that. And so that's the advantage of why police have adopted this technology so quickly. You know, they're at 16,300 law enforcement agencies just in the U.S. alone. And we've got a deep market penetration with these devices because they are effective, they are safer, and they have accountability measures built into these things that actually records a time, date, and duration of when you've used these. So there's a lot of things that come into play with a taser, but I can assure you that the drugs and alcohol have no play in that, and they don't make it more dangerous. And in fact, if you like a little bit of trivia, if you're on the influence of cocaine, it's actually even safer. Cocaine, while it's not a good food group, and I don't recommend that to your listeners, actually makes your heart harder to shock. So it's been an issue that's been out there in emergency rooms. People brought that to our attention, and we actually studied this at the Cleveland Clinic. So it gives you a higher safety margin when you're on cocaine and you happen to be hit by a taser, interestingly enough.
Wow. Since you touched upon it, this is considered a less than lethal weapon.
Correct.
What's the track record?
Well, unfortunately, we've been involved with 1.4 million use of force, actual field applications by law enforcement and consumers, and we've had 12 deaths that have occurred that have been listed as contributory. The vast majority of those deaths were caused by the taser making that person fall. We've had skull fractures that have unfortunately resulted in death, broken necks, and things like that. So it's if you look at that number, 12 compared to 1.4, I don't want to mitigate those 12 tragic deaths. but in terms of a safety track record, it's pretty strong with 1.4 million. And that's why they call these less lethal tools. The term non-lethal is really most understood, I think, by the public, but also misunderstood, because I think when you tell people it's non-lethal, they assume that there can be no tragic outcome that could possibly happen. When you use less lethal tools, the outcome, the intent is non-lethal, but there can be dynamic situations, you know, falling down, for example, with a taser. That has happened, and it can happen. We warn against that. The other danger would be hitting somebody in the eye. Now, it's a very small surface area of the body, and that's why we put laser sights in our C2s, so you know that where you're aiming at. There's no kick when you fire it. It's very simple to use, but that's another thing that can happen in the field as well.
So it's like any other safety tool that you have. It has to be treated with respect and used appropriately.
It sure does. And, you know, I've got these at home with two kids. They're 11 and 13. They've grown up with me at Taser. They think I make them to this day. But the one thing I always tell them is, you know, I always have them get that curiosity factor. I've got them in my glove box. I've got them in my nightstand. And I've got them in my travel bags when I travel. And I don't want them finding these things and wanting to play with them. So what I've done, I've let them shoot this device in a safe environment. They understand how it works. And when they have friends come over, I let them, I will actually zap the little front of the device for some of the kids that may want to see this because they all know I work with Taser. But I teach them about firearm safety because I treat it as if it's a firearm. And then I let them also zap that without a cartridge in there. And I do that in a safe manner because they get to experience what this, you know, sounds like, feels like. They see a laser sight. I let them get their yah-yahs out. I don't want them to not have their curiosity factor go unquenched. But I do it in a safe environment as a safe parent.
Excellent. Now, here's a question I bet you've probably never had before. Well, maybe. What about wild or feral animals? You know, a lot of people carry pepper spray for use on aggressive dogs. Is this an appropriate tool for that?
It is. Now, interestingly enough, we have what's called the X3W, and that just came out. That's a three-shot wildlife tool that we're having tremendous success knocking down bears, moose.
Seriously? Yep. It actually gets through the fur and the skin and everything else?
Yeah, and that's what's been one of the most kind of quiet things that we've been pursuing with Taser. But we're, if you go to the taser.com website, you can see there's a section dedicated to wildlife now. A lot of these bears have been problematic in numerous states, not so much for attacks, but getting into garbage dumps, and then they get more acclimated to humans, and they go into cities. That's where the bears find themselves and, you know, really get into trouble because they're interacting with humans. And so they do what's called hazing. And I'm learning a lot about this wildlife issue. I mean, hazing means you're going to annoy the bear to make them go. There is no known tool right now that prevents them from coming back to dumps and back to the town. So typically what they have to do is haze them. If that doesn't work, they dart them, which is very dangerous. They have a very poor track record in terms of safety. And they sometimes will then drug them and then remove them from the area hundreds of miles away. These bears are very difficult to stop. The fur is thick, as you mentioned. They're hardest, you know, hard to get with a, even with a good drug, you know, a dart gun. But we've had wildlife teams take out the X3W with a 35-foot cartridge, and they're knocking the bears down several times, and eventually the bears get up and run and break the wires. And right now, their fight or flight response is kicking in, and they're not only are they fleeing, but they're not coming back. So what we're doing is we're actually saving a lot of animals because these tranquilizer dart guns, I won't even tell you the percentages, but they're horrendous. This is not like when you and I were a kid watching Mutual of Omaha and someone darts an animal from a helicopter and they go down and go to sleep. They can go into shock. Sometimes you don't use enough drugs. Sometimes you use too much. You're guesstimating the weight. So this has been a tremendous tool. Now, in terms of consumers, yes, there is, you know, an X3 that's available for consumers. We have the X26C that's available for consumers. That would knock down most large animals. But for the Taser C2, you have to remember that when you aim these devices, you're dealing with an animal that you're going to have to hit from the side for the most part. Because the Taser, as I mentioned earlier, the top probe goes out straight, bottom goes down vertically, 8-degree downward angle. Most animals are horizontal. They're not standing up. So you have to sometimes be able to hit them from the side, or you have to have a large enough front torso and, you know, wait till they get close enough to hit them really in the chest and the head with these probes. And we've had coyotes taken down. We've had dogs. We have law enforcement using these on patrol where they've been attacked by drug dogs and pit bulls and things like that. So they do work very well. Now, let me make sure I give a big caveat in the animals. Animals recover instantly. Humans recover instantly too, but humans don't jump up and run when they get hit by tasers. Animals tend to have that flight or flight response kick in, and they will get up, break the wires, and flee, and now they're gone. So they're knocked down briefly, but they will get up as soon as that cycle stops, and they will run. So you have to keep that in mind. So yes, very long answer to you, because it's very complex what's happening right now, and lots of new things are happening with taser and wildlife.
So the C2, which is the civilian model, is not really good for animals. But the W3, is that what it was?
Yeah, the X3W. The C2 will work on small animals. Dogs, I would certainly trust this against a dog. I'd have to make sure, again, that you're getting two probes onto that dog.
Yeah, and if not, use the mouth and jaws and growling, you know, you don't get too much of a side angle. Unless you're somebody else.
Yeah, and I've had lots of reports and pictures actually sent to me by law enforcement when they've had to use theirs, and they end up hitting the animal typically in the head and the chest, because you can picture that animal. If you can picture that face coming at you, it's not a lot of surface area compared to if you look at that animal horizontally.
Now, does the X3W have a different angle? Are they more parallel?
No, they're just they're getting good shots. They have a further distance that they can have with a 35-foot cartridge versus a 15-foot cartridge that we provide to the consumers. We limit 15 feet for consumer sales because we want to keep it defensive in nature. The law enforcement, we want to keep that, you know, with the maximum protection. So they mostly purchase 25-footers and 35-foot cartridges.
Okay. Now, is the X3W available to civilians?
Not yet, but we do have the X26C available that would have stopping power that's relatively close to it. But again, I would be very skeptical to use these on large animals. They have worked very well. I would wait until we get some solution out there for that. The X3W has higher power. It's not intended for humans. But I don't want to confuse listeners here. We do have this. The C2 will stop most of the small dogs and large dogs as well. I just don't want them going out there and trying to take on a bear, you know, something that's very large, or a moose. The moose are very dangerous out there, too, especially if they're in a rut, and the females are very dangerous that are out there.
Yeah, because we have a very broad audience, and so we have a lot of campers and backpackers and hikers, and then we have the street hikers, too, you know, the people that are just living pure cities and neighborhoods, and they're looking for protection from feral animals and aggressive animals, four-legged and two-legged.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to find out if that was applicable. Because you don't necessarily want to scare the dog off, but you don't want to kill it.
Absolutely. And these won't kill the dog. You're just trying to find a safe solution to get away. And again, I always kind of use that as, don't forget that term about taser. It's going to provide a window of opportunity for you to get away. I mean, that's really what the taser does for consumers. I've been attacked. I know what it's like. There's lots of dreams you'd like to do later, what you wish you could have done. But my one wish when I got attacked was, I just wish I had time to have gotten out of there. And that's what the taser does.
So let's talk about home. And actually inside the home.
Yeah.
How effective, especially when you talk about the C2 and how it gives you a 30-second window of opportunity to escape. What about inside the home? How does it work inside the home?
Inside the home, I can tell you from my own personal experience that with me having it in my home, when you hear the things that go bump in the night, or when I came home from vacation last month, I saw some materials on the ground that didn't look good. That weren't part of things that I would have in the house, broken materials. I look up and there's a shutter open and I see that my door has been pried open. And I don't know whether someone's in the house. So I grabbed my C2. I got the kids out and said, get across the street. And I said, just wait for me. And what I did was, and I was pretty confident no one was in there, but I didn't want to be surprised. I turned on my safety. I actually turned the safety to the off position, meaning that it arms the device. It turns on LED lights. And it also arms a laser sight. And I had that in my hand, and I checked every room and closet. Now, the reason I did that was, one, I could deploy that if necessary, so I wouldn't be surprised. But two, it gives me a little more confidence because the person that may be in the house is going to see a laser sight. And they're going to see these lights coming at them. And I think that would provide a pretty good warning, because one of our most successful features in the field for law enforcement is not deploying a taser. It's actually giving good verbal commands and putting a laser dot on somebody. When you put a laser dot on somebody and you give good verbal commands, we're getting amazing compliance from some very bad people out there, because they see that it's a taser, they know that you're willing to use it, and they know law enforcement can use it, and they know that if it was a firearm, in some cases, you know, if they're a bad guy and the cop does that, they can turn and run. You can't just shoot somebody. They can with a taser, though. And these suspects are complying with that. So that's why I took that taser in my hand and turned it on, or turned the safety of the opposition. So I armed it. I was ready to go. And I was ready to aim, you know, that laser shot at somebody if they were there and give them a quick verbal command. If not, I'm going to deploy that.
Okay.
And I would, again, place that on the ground. I'd be calling 911 and I'd be getting out of there. We don't need to be playing Rambo here. And the police will back us up on this when we first came out of this. You don't need to stick around there. Consumers think that, well, now what do I do after I've used a taser? You're not trained to handcuff somebody. You're not going to have handcuffs around. We've got you out of a dangerous situation. We're going to buy you time. Get out of there. Let that device do its work. And in most cases, after someone's been through a 30-second application, they are in no mood to begin their attack again. It's a long workout for 30 seconds. I can assure you, I've done 5-second cycles, and that's a long cycle. It takes that aggressive mentality out of you. It takes that fight out of you. And 30 seconds is really going to take the fight out of somebody. So you do have good time to get out of there.
Excellent. So you can deploy it, and then while the person's shaking on the ground, you get your family out and around them.
Yep.
And then out of the house.
Absolutely. Go to the neighbor's house. Get out of there. Get 911 involved. Just get out of that situation.
Excellent. Now, a lot of the questions, although most of us listening are not actually going to be able to do this, but everyone's always curious as what the differences are between the military, law enforcement, and civilian versions. Could you give us a breakdown of that?
Sure. Yeah, and for the most part, not much in terms of its effect. So I want to assure the listeners that if you watch cops, or you watch, you know, if you see your police officers carrying the yellow or the black X26, the most common device out there in the streets now, that's a single shot system. That is our flagship. That's at about 16,000 law enforcement agencies right now. And that is a single-shot system. It looks like a small gun. It's gun-shaped. And it has two LED lights and a laser. And it can go anywhere from 15 feet to 35 feet in terms of its distance. And it also records the time, the date, and the duration of when it was used to back up the officer's report. So it's got a lot of accountability features in there. We also make an X26C. It looks exactly like the X26 that the law enforcement carries. We call it the C because it stands for consumer. And that's a, you know, $9.99 for its basic cost there. It comes with 6 cartridges. It comes with some practice cartridges as well. So what we want you to do is use it just like the police would. You carry it like a firearm. You holster it. You can carry it in a purse. It's a little bigger than our C2. Very successful tool. Its output is going to be the same thing as a police officer's, except for one key difference. When a police officer ever deploys a taser, be it our new X2 or the new X3 that we have, they run in 5-second cycle durations. So if you pull that trigger, gives you an automatic 5-second cycle if you're a police officer. They're trained to get in and get that person and cuff them under power. They're going to touch that person while that cycle is going through that the suspect's body, and they're going to control them and cuff them. If they need to, they hit the trigger again. They'll hit them again for a 5-second cycle. A consumer is not trained to do that. So what we do is we want to give you that window of opportunity. So if you pull the trigger of an X26C, that'll give you a 10-second cycle, and if you push the trigger 2 more times, it'll give you a 30-second cycle. It adds 10 seconds on each of those cycles. Now, the most common and smallest consumer model is called a Taser C2. It's available in 5 different colors that are out there. We get laughed at for the pink and red ones, but we made it fashionable, just like they did with a lot of the colored cell phones years ago. But we wanted that C2 to not look like a firearm, so it's shaped like a cell phone. It's got a little bit of a curve to it, some nice colors. And it's a single-shot system. It holds one cartridge. You can replace it. It's smaller. And it does also have 2 LED lights when you slide the safety back to the off position. And it also has a laser sight that tells you where the top probe will go at. Now, its cycle is 30 seconds. So that way, when you pull the trigger, it's a fire and forget. You just simply push the trigger, place it on the ground, and get out of there. Those are some of the devices that we have that are up available. Now, we have the old M26. That was our old device from 1999 called the M26C. That comes with four cartridges that are out there. That's a cheaper model. It's in terms of cost. It's about a $500 model. But I think bang for the buck, Taser C2 is the way to go. It doesn't look like you're carrying a firearm. It still presents a laser sight to a bad guy, lights that person up with two LED lights, and has the same effect that a law enforcement model would have.
Now, you also mentioned range.
Mm-hmm.
The range, again, for the law enforcement is?
Law enforcement typically uses the 25-foot cartridge.
25-foot.
So most of them use the 25. They can go up to 35, but most of the contacts that police have, and just like consumers, you know, confrontation is up close and personal. It's not from 50 feet away. You know, even when police officers use these, the average distance is 7 to 10 feet. And that's typically the distance that a consumer uses it. So don't be scared that we're only giving you 15 feet. 15 feet is a considerable range for someone that's attacking you. And really, if you go out there and measure 15 feet, you know, when's the last time someone really was a threat to you at 15 feet? Well, you can hopefully see it coming, but we give you that zone of protection up to 15 feet. That's pretty good distance, believe it or not, for a consumer. And in most cases, if you have an attack, you're going to be using it from 7 to 10 feet, just like law enforcement.
So let's talk about training.
Sure. Go ahead.
No, I was wondering, I always advocate getting training in any defensive tool that you carry. So how do people get training?
Well, the training is really simple. We provide a DVD with all of our packages, and we provide one training cartridge in the C2 package. So you can have a cartridge to shoot dedicated for training. We have a target, and the DVD will actually walk you through in a very calm, cool, and collected manner of how this works. These are actual law enforcement officers that have used these in the field, and they walk you through how to use a taser from maintenance to controlling it to what to do if you actually use this in an attack, some suggestions, and what do you do if you miss? Are you out of luck, for example? No, you're not, because the front still behaves like a very, very powerful stun gun. What if you have multiple attackers? Take out the most aggressive one first. Then you hold on to that device and keep others at bay with that powerful stun gun. So we go through a lot of those different scenarios for the consumers, and we do this in a very calm environment. This is not a scare tactics device. We never use those tactics when we train. They have to be simple instructions, and they have to be clear and concise, because once you've been attacked, everything goes out the window. Panic sets in. Your motor skills go right out the window. So we made this simple to use, that if you're holding on to it, say you're walking in an alley or a parking garage, we tell you, hey, put this thing in your hand. It's ready to go. If you feel threatened, slide that safety back. Be careful, because it could deploy. But we tell you, arm that. Let someone know you've got something in your hand. It's got a laser sight, two LED lights, and you're ready to use it if you need to. So we go through a lot of those different scenarios for the folks that are out there, and we try to make this something that we're going to save your life potentially with this device, and yet you're not going to kill that person. And I think there's a lot of hesitation to use firearms for a certain group. If you're not willing to make that big step, that device really isn't much use to you. Maybe you can use it to threaten somebody, but you're not going to pull that trigger. It's not much use. I think we feel a lot of people buy the taser that aren't really quite comfortable with firearms, but they want to do something that won't hurt somebody. And the taser is that next step down, if you will, where people are not, you know, they're not afraid to use a taser because they know they won't take a life. And I know, I find that unfathomable. But, you know, my wife at the time always said, I would never take someone's life unless someone maybe threatened our kids. I just don't understand that mindset. But I do have to understand that mindset. A lot of people feel that way. And I think the taser really fills that gap. And she's very comfortable with that.
Now, what if they want, because a lot of people like individual and hands-on training from an instructor. Mm-hmm. Is that available?
We did have that. It's something we can still arrange. There's a small cost of that. And these are actual law enforcement individuals that have been trained on the C2. They've also been through their law enforcement training for the actual taser. And in most cases, they're taser trainers at their academy as well. So these are top flight folks. That can possibly arrange if you contact Taser International.
sort of like a Tupperware party for tasers.
Yeah, yeah. And we do have sellers that actually do that. We don't do the Tupperware parties, but there are actually distributors out there that do that in-home training. They found that, you know, people are more comfortable in their homes, and they do this in a very relaxed environment. Again, not using scare tactics, but let's get some women around. And typically in that environment, the gals that do these trainings also bring in law enforcement officers so they can talk about personal safety and the taser too.
Now, there's something that I missed asking earlier about the cartridges. Now, if it's a single shot, and with the civilian models, you put it down and you run away, why do you have multiple cartridges?
Is it possible to replace
a swap out a magazine? Is it something that's possible in these devices if, in case of multiple attackers or you miss?
You certainly could. It is feasible to do that. You can reload. You take your forefinger and your thumb and you depress the cartridge, drop it, reload within the cartridge. There's several people I know that do carry spare cartridges. So you could actually hit somebody, take out that, turn it off, of course, then reload it, and you're ready to take on another person if necessary, or if that person, maybe you're in an environment where you can't get away. You may want to have that second cartridge or third cartridge. That's why some of our packages include multiple cartridges, so you can reload.
So the last question we have before we move on to other topics is the physiological response. A lot of the times, you know, people hear that you may lose bowel control when you get hit with these, or that it completely knocks you unconscious, because often they see people afterwards and they're just laying there on the ground, or sometimes they get up. What actually happens?
Well, I can tell you from my own personal experience, and most of the employees here go through it, and I've seen beyond thousands of actual applications in the field. The typical response is once those two probes make contact, you feel as if you've been hit by a joy buzzer where the contacts hit. Have you ever heard of joy buzzer? Like vibration. And then there's an immediate sense of, it's discomforting. It doesn't hurt to me. A lot of people always say it's the most painful thing they've ever been through. And then when you ask them half an hour later, you know, it really wasn't painful. Just, they didn't know what to say. They just say it was painful. I didn't find it painful. I found it to be like pins and needles kind of where it went through, and like a funny bone. Imagine your funny bone going off throughout your body, you know, for 5 seconds throughout your body. That's what it felt like for me. And as soon as it stopped, I felt relief. I felt calm. I could get up immediately. I wanted to relax at that point. I didn't really want to. So a lot of people are under the impression that you're stunned or that you're, you know, going to be knocked out. It simply doesn't do that. And I always tell people, it's like a light switch. When a light is on, it's on. And we're sending electricity through your body. We're sending a circuit of energy. And it's got a positive, negative probe, and we're just completing a circuit. And while it's on, it's discomforting. It's not comfortable to not be able to do anything. In fact, it's very disconcerting because you can't control yourself. And so a lot of people always ask me, you know, what are all these feelings? I'm like, well, it's very disconcerting because you can't do anything. You can't control your movements. And just for your muscles, you know, vibrating 19 times per second, and you can hear things while it's going on. You're completely aware of your environment, but typically when you get hit, you fall to the ground, and there's two typical reactions. You can sometimes stiffen up straight as a board. It's called the plywood stage, because just picture a piece of plywood or broom handle that's just been knocked over. It goes straight down the ground. The other ones tend to go fall down the ground and almost assume a fetal position while they're shaking, and their hands close up, and they literally look like they're almost having a seizure. And as soon as it's over, they recover instantly.
Okay. So the bowel movement thing is...
Yeah. You know, we've done this for live TV, city council meetings. In fact, we have a lot of chiefs of police that actually, to prove that they want these taser devices, they'll actually go to city council looking for funding and say, you know, and I'm willing to take a hitter, because there's a lot of controversy about taser and we'll dispel all these myths. I'm going to take a hit. And then sometimes we'll get city council members to do that. So imagine how many city council meetings we would have ruined if that were the effect. So no, it doesn't cause bowels to be loosened or lose your, you know, you're not going to, you know, have any reaction like that at all. The worst reaction I see from that is typically loud screaming. And just a little interesting trivia, women tend not to scream, whereas men scream in most of the cases. Very few women will scream when they get hit by this. It's mind-boggling how many people we've done this with, and usually they make a grunt, and they're make no other sounds after that. Men tend to scream. And we also have another unusual reaction. We get, I call it Tourette syndrome. We get a lot of cursing that tends to happen as well.
Hmm. Interesting. Let's move on. I think I've covered all the bases. And I really appreciate everything you've shared with us as far as tasers. But when we were talking before the show, you mentioned that you've actually had some confrontations with criminals when you lived in D.C. that you were willing to share with us that aren't totally related to taser, but partially related.
Yeah, the first one was really what opened my eyes to personal safety for me personally. I was jumped coming home from for a Halloween event that I had with a football game. Came home with my buddy from the Bronx, and we walked home to our apartment. And I got jumped, and so did he. And I was taken down on the ground. My face was repeatedly smashed to the asphalt. The whole time, I was in denial. And I was giddy. I was actually laughing and trying to run through all the scenarios of which buddy of this is mine that's jumped me. You talk about denial. It just kept going on. I didn't have fight or flight. I just never knew I was being attacked. And yet my teeth can account for it, and so could my nose. And finally, a sawed-off shotgun was shoved into my temple. And that kind of immediately irritated me, and I realized, wow, that hurt, and this is real. And I looked up and saw a shotgun. And suddenly my pockets are being gone through, my pants, leather jackets removed. My buddy is now fighting with the guy over his shotgun. We're hearing people screaming. We're calling the police. And it was a devastating experience because I lost a lot of personal effects. My grandfather had a switchblade that I carried just purely for sentimental reasons. His lighter. I wasn't a smoker. I always just carried it. Lost my first big purchase having worked on Capitol Hill. There goes my leather jacket, my keys, my checkbook, and my wallet. I was furious at that point. And I realized just how helpless I was. And then I had another incident where I stopped an assault 6 months later. And I pulled a knife out on a guy and said, I see that you've got a gun next to this guy's head. It's New Year's Eve. Just, you know, rob him and just leave. And he ends up pointing the gun in my face about 3 feet away and fakes that he's going to pull the trigger. And I thought, boy, I've lost my life over trying to protect somebody. The third one was coming home from Capitol Hill. I worked in the Senate at the time and was reading a book after getting off of work in a place called The Grotto, which is one of the most peaceful places in all of Capitol Hill. And a guy on PCP jumped me and attacked me. And I then went into full punching mode, and I hit him between 50 to 100 times, I told the police, and nothing fazed him. And he had a neutral face, not positive, not happy. Police came, tackled him. 8 officers were thrown in the air, and I kid you not, he literally stood up, and they all were thrown in the air. They finally took him to jail and informed me that this guy was on PCP. He never felt a thing. So those three things had a tremendous impact on me going to Taser. One, I wanted a device that I could use for myself. And I knew I couldn't carry a gun. You can't carry guns in D.C. And I can't carry a gun working there. I needed something that would have worked. And I never knew of any devices that would do that. And that's when Taser approached me when they started the company. And it really became a personal mission of mine. And then, you know, my sister needed something. My mother needed something. When my father died, you know, she no longer has any there to protect her. So it's a real personal mission for all of us here. When we found this company, we, you know, I was the one that could share those three attacks, and I was helpless on those, and I didn't know what to do. And I've since gone through close quarter combat and things like that. I'm much more aware of my surroundings, and that's probably the biggest thing is, you know, if you're not going to buy a taser, at least engage that brain to know what to look for and be aware. I'll tell you, if you're just aware, you can prevent most of these attacks from the get-go. But boy, when it does happen, it's nice to have some type of tool or training. And whether it's a taser or pepper spray or, you know, karate, whatever it is, you have to have a plan. And if you don't have a plan, you're going to be like I was on Capitol Hill, giddy, laughing, and denying that it's happening. And you're going to be a victim. And you don't need to be a victim.
Wow. Those are some incredible stories. For most people, one is devastating. I can't imagine how you must feel after three. Especially with a sawed-off shotgun put in your face. I mean, that is... There's no missing at that range, and then it's instant death.
Yeah, and it was more than I wasn't scared at the time because I was going through that denial stage. And then I did eventually get scared for a second. And then I realized I needed to defend myself. And that's when I got up and, you know, started to defend myself and ended up running. What it did was it made me angry for about a year. And there's no reason to be angry about it. It happens. But it made me angry because I couldn't do anything about it. And I think most men are programmed that they can do something about that. And you almost feel neutered. And it's pretty emasculating. And I'll be very frank with that. You know, I ended up having my father send me a gun illegally in D.C. My father's an Episcopal minister. I mean, this was your classic case of, you know, we need to do something. And here's your minister father sending you a gun illegally into the city. And I couldn't even take it out of the apartment. I just used it for, you know, for at least home protection. So I had a lot of things that I went through. And I realized that the gun for me, I am comfortable with firearms, but I couldn't be comfortable. It's illegal in D.C. And it wasn't the answer for me for all things. And neither is a single tool. Taser won't be an answer for every situation. And again, I want to make sure that there is no magic bullet. And anybody that tells you that there is a magic bullet, they're not the right person to listen to. So you need to have different tools, different mindsets, different training. And again, you need to listen, you know, to this show, for example, get all the different suggestions that are out there. And there's lots of good suggestions out there. And you have to use something that's going to work for you that you're comfortable with. Because I found something that I'm very comfortable with and my kids are comfortable with. I would even trust my children with this device. If push came to shove and I had to throw one of those devices at my kids, I've trained them well enough to do this. And I'm not some gun-toting guy that wants to do this, you know, and arm the world with tasers. I'm practical and I realize that these things happen. So for me, it's about getting training and being aware.
Great. Well, I really appreciate everything you've shared with us tonight. And do you have any parting thoughts?
Parting thoughts. You know what? Again, folks, use your mind. There is no one simple solution out there. And, you know, taser is one of those tools in the toolkit. We happen to believe it's the most effective tool out there. The law enforcement would back us up, barring their, you know, they find this at 94% field effectiveness. That's as close as you're going to get to, you know, the most powerful tool in the street in terms of the less lethal tools that you can pick. But pick something that you're going to be comfortable with and get the knowledge so that you can be empowered.
Great. Well, thanks again for coming on.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed the show.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back. Since this week's show was an interview, there is no summary. And thanks again to Steve for coming on the show. We really appreciate the time he spent with us. So, that'll do it for this week. You can follow my daily tips on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, I'm Practical Def, and Facebook is Practical Defense. The show now has mobile phone applications for both Android and iOS. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Hey everybody, we are
Lady Antebellum.
Before every show, we practice. Gotta be prepared.
Exactly, and the American Red Cross wants us to be prepared too. Prepared for disaster. This
world. Just take 3 steps to be Red Cross ready. Create a disaster supplies kit with water, food, and a first aid kit. Make a family communication plan, and listen to local radio and TV reports to stay informed.
It's that simple. To learn more, visit redcross.org or contact your local Red Cross chapter today. Thank you so much.
Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddix.com. That's podcast@alexaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexaddix.com.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.